Welcome back to the Game of Thrones After Show. We are doing Season 6, Episode 4, Book of the Stranger, which I'm going to subtitle, Always Choose Door Number 3.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
There we go. The music is playing.
Bum, bum, ba-da-dum.
I'm going to try not to stutter too much because I am taking over for Kyle this week. My name is Sarah Stretton, but we do have the normal panel on board. Kristen Snyder.
Hey, guys. You can check out my Instagram or my Twitter at Cinematic Escape.
Cinematic Escape.
Ryan Malady.
Hodor. Hodor. Hodor.
That's his whole spiel, this whole episode.
That's it. It's all you need. What's up, everyone? It's Ryan Malady here. I'm actually not in the live chat today, but today we actually have Zach Wilson in the live chat at youtube.com/AfterBuzzTV, where we have the best fans in the world discussing Game of Thrones the only way that super fans know how, ruthlessly. So enjoy the live chat and enjoy the show.
Yeah. So Zach, if you want to say hello, he's in the booth with us. He's doing pretty much every task.
He's engineering, he's filming, and he's typing away.
Yeah, hey guys, just call me the voice of winter. I'm always watching. You don't know when I'm going to be there, but I'll be around.
I like that.
All right, so we are going to start, I think, with the most pumped up character of this episode, Daenerys. She has the long list of titles that could flow, but I think we could mainly say unburnt.
Yeah.
Unburnt today.
I was thinking refried. the refried.
I don't think anyone's going to go along
refried
with that.
Queens.
I don't think that has the same queens ring. But we could try. Refried queens.
The unburnt, the refried.
This scene was so awesome, though. I mean, I felt like this episode we were finally back to the Game of Thrones that we all know and love, mm-hmm. just because of this epicness that unfolded.
There's a lot that happened. This episode is pretty sweet. I mean, I feel like the past few people were kind of, you know, it's moving along a little slowly because mm-hmm. they were just kind of posturing, mm-hmm. getting ready for political, you know, turmoil. And now is we're really starting to see kind of the blood from the dagger, so to speak.
Ooh. Well, I think that what we've been talking about with Daenerys over the past couple seasons, people have wanted to see her get back to these roots of
being a badass.
As we see what's going in Meereen, although she's been a badass, her plans haven't been completely positive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just always been this is the right way, this is the wrong way.
And then this is Daenerys' way.
Yes, but we did get more of that this week. Mm-hmm. The options were either she was going to pretty much be sold into slavery or become one of these wise women of the city of Dothrak, Vast Dothrak, and instead she was like, no, I'm just going to burn you all.
Door number three.
Door number three.
Right.
But the look of this, even when we were saying it, I don't know how you felt, Zach, but from the inside of this central room.
Yeah.
Were we thrilled with this?
You saw it coming,
guys,
right?
Guys, I loved it.
Of course, Kristen, you loved it. I thought it was beautifully done from the outside the Dosh Killeen was burning. It was beautiful. On the inside, though, we saw it coming, you know. She's like, mm-hmm. she's gonna burn it down.
There was so much fire in there.
Well, like she tips over a thing, and then all these like supposedly the most like hardcore guys in the world. I mean, she called it though. It was like, you are small men, you know. And they really did cower over like a little flame.
I was surprised none of them tried to fight her. With them. They all kind of just did the huddle in fear approach.
Yeah.
Which gives her some strength because it proves why she should be leading them if they're going to be all talk.
Well, I think they probably couldn't breathe either. They're in this wooden structure, right? And
okay.
I mean,
right,
we're not there, but I think that at that point, as soon as those flames turned over, I don't think that they can breathe. So I don't think they're thinking about her. I am surprised though, like you guys said, that no one tried to attack her, but...
Well, you know, what's interesting is by the time it's burnt down, I don't think anyone outside knows what happened. All they know is that this, you know, this temple just burnt down and here comes this woman stepping out of it. I don't think they know that they just killed all their leaders.
I agree.
She just slaughtered all their leaders.
That is a point, is that they were able to hide all this, except for the one other Dasha Kaleen, who knew that there were outsiders within the Sacred City, outsiders who were warned, and Daenerys let her live. Whether or not that turns out to be a bad decision or not, it is that one, not weak link, but she really has to gain that woman's support and not be like ratted out.
I think they're going to brush over it. I don't think anyone is going to say what happened in there. I think they are so mesmerized by the fact that she has survived this. I don't think anyone's been happy under the Dothraki rule the way it's been. Just like she said, they raid cities, they take a few horses here and there, they rape and pillage. They haven't been doing anything really worthwhile, and I don't think that they were happy, so I think that gladly they're going to follow her and not really question what happened within there.
I think you're right. I think she has another another dragon under in the fold. You know, she's got the second sons, you know?
Keep going.
The Dothraki horde now.
I think this is going to be her resurgence of we're really going to see if it Daenerys has learned how to compromise at all. In every city she's taken, as we'll see in Meereen, like, she doesn't typically make any compromises. It's always her vision. And this is kind of her second shot with the Dothraki. She's led Dothraki before. She lost her horde through death and waking up and then basically be gone. Now it's going to be, can she compromise? How does she introduce this Dothraki and all of their own lifestyle beliefs with the ex-slaves which she has, with these new masters that she might be dealing with? And is she going to compromise? Is she going to listen to anyone's advice? And before we go to Meereen, also, how much of a play Jorah will be? Is she going to trust him again? And when will it be revealed that he has grayscale?
I don't think that Dario is going to hide very long that he has grayscale.
Right.
But I think when you asked me earlier what was like a theme of this episode, it's definitely tradition. And with what you were going along and saying with all these different armies that she's bringing together, she has broken all of their traditions that they grew up with, that they've lived by their entire life. And she's putting in, replacing them with new traditions. But she's not necessarily breaking any good traditions they have. It's really like the bad traditions that they had that she's replacing with good traditions.
Has she really replaced anything, though? I think
that's the point that
Tyrion's saying is creating a political vacuum. You can't remove a system of government and ways of life and just assume that it'll get filled with what you want it to be. You have to provide the means, the tools to rebuild.
And speaking to that, so Tyrion comes in with, you have Grey Worm and Missandei at his side, speaking with supposedly the voice of the queen, saying these are her words and her wishes to these masters who have come into the city. Basically, he gives them 7 years. Seven years to transition from the method of slavery over into this new political regime. This is the diplomatic method, not the military method. And to top it off, because obviously Daenerys would love this factor, he's going to, you know, give them some prostitutes or something to enjoy themselves.
He's a politician.
That's how you seal the deal.
That's politics for you.
Well, what's really in it for them, though, is, you know, them cutting off the support for the Sons of the Harpy, because we know, obviously, Tyrion and everybody else knows that someone's supporting the Sons of the Harpy, so it's obviously Slaver's Bay that's still doing this. I mean, that's just his methods that he knows from King's Landing. I don't think that Dany is going to agree with that completely, but I like that he's taking this diplomatic approach and doing something different and filling that gap with what we said, a new tradition, because she's just been taking out the old traditions and not necessarily having a true vision of where to go from there.
I really liked what he said, let us sail in the tide of freedom instead of drowning in it. I mean, he's doing something, and he's advising, and I feel like he's always really wanted to rule.
I thought that it was an interesting kind of position to be in, because although you have Grey Worm and Missandei together, they're kind of representing the exact same point of view. They didn't really differentiate, come up with different arguments. They are coming, like, we saw Missandei the other week get very, like, these people understand war. Grey Worm's, he's saying now a little bit on the peaceful side because he doesn't want to completely cross the line, but we only have the Tyrion versus them.
Where's Varys?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. I was like, where is this guy? I mean, he's one of the advisors. He's one of the key. I mean, he over there still dealing with who we speculated to be a leader of Sons of the Harpy, Vala.
Is he helping Vala get away?
I think obviously whatever Tyrion says, Varys has already had a pre-council meeting with him, and he just knows you can't have too many people speaking. I mean, even Grey Worm and Missandei, they didn't speak until they were acknowledged by the slaves.
You could tell they wanted to. They're just like, what is he saying? What is he doing? And Grey Worm made a point to say, you will not use them. They will use you. That is what they do. Is that what's going to happen? I mean, are these slavers there?
Oh, trusting the slavers and how this will turn out when they can't even admit to being funding the Sons of the Harpy out loud.
Right.
I think that it depends how we see this show going. If we do have... and what they want Daenerys to be. Because if Daenerys leaves Meereen and goes to Westeros with the Dothraki, she needs to have a positive reputation to stand on.
Right.
And so in that way, you would want them to conquer. But they always have, or they're probably going to want to have Daenerys find that third door, that other option that actually leads to success.
And she has 7 years to find it now.
I don't think, obviously, if we're going to use that time, but I think, obviously, she's uniting all these armies, like John is uniting, you know, the armies on his side of things.
That was kind of my theme of the episode. I'm like, we're making new teams.
Yeah.
Bringing teams together. And this is just, for Daenerys, another team of women, where it's pretty much going to be all women at the head of all of these cows. So.
I don't know. I mean, they do have, like, a male army that's there, and I think she's kind of got all the Dothraki. Even though this is where all the women are, I think all the men will follow her now, too.
I agree, but the second in command, if you get rid of all of the calls, who is the calls go to for wisdom, is the women. So it is, like, this next level of people who to communicate to through to this all of these hordes of Dothraki is going to be all women. Primarily, unless men start rising up.
So you have this horde of Khaleesis. You have the Dothraki horde, the Unsullied, the Second Sons, and dragons. What else do you need, Khaleesi?
I find it very interesting thinking about the fact that she's got another army that uses slaves and takes slaves. And if she's going to march on people for having slaves, how are the Dothraki people going to react to that? Even if there are no calls left.
It's completely true, because it's a battle she's already had to fight, and her previous way was taking them under protection or claiming so many people herself, and even she had to kind of secede some of them once in a while. So it is, where is she going to bridge all of these cultures? I think she's going to have to compromise, because I don't even know if you could make me believe that all of them are just like, you're right, scrap society from scratch. We're just going to go with this new utopian vision.
Yeah, I think that's what Tyrion comes in with. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is what you have to compromise at a certain point. But as It's Really in the chat points out, Dothraki only follow strength.
Right.
True. And she just proved that she is the strongest with, I don't know about you guys, when I saw her walk out of the fire, all I yelled was that was the most baller move ever.
She has a few, and they normally are surrounded by fire. Like, bulls go in.
And you know what's funny? When people are naked and nude, that's usually, like, when they're their weakest, right? But when she's naked and nude, it's, like, heavenly for everyone.
It's a powerful image, for sure. But you know what? I feel like she hasn't really had a real fight yet. She's always inspired people with symbolism, with a dragon, with the fire, you know. But she's never, I mean, she's kind of punished a large group of slaves or slave masters before.
We haven't seen any sword wielding.
We haven't seen really any necessarily battles. And she hasn't won any battles. She's won confidence. But she's been fighting an ideological battle against slavery, not against any particular army.
Let's see if she has to get her actual hands dirty anytime soon. But for now, let's go over to Jon Snow up at the wall, who
finally gets reunited
with Sansa Stark as she comes through the gate with Bran,
Podrick,
the whole crew, talking about new bonds being formed, and we get another hug, because the wall is just full of hugs right now. We got one last week, we're back this week. This reunion the first scene with them, I thought the chemistry, I was so happy to have them back, and I was like, wow, this feels so awkward that people are happy talking together, mm-hmm. like in a good mood. Like,
oh. It's like catching up on, you know, old times back in Winterfell. It was nice.
I couldn't wait for this to happen because up until this point, over the last five seasons, we have watched the Starks fall apart. Mm. Now we're going to watch them come back together and take over. And I am so excited. It's like complete revenge against everyone.
They're going to take back the North. They've got to. They're going to.
I agree. I thought it was interesting before we get into the motivational letter that they received from Ramsay.
Come and see.
I thought it was just an interesting note that why they are focusing so much on him, on the sword, on Mormont's sword, on him defying the title of commander. Like, we heard him say again this week that he is not the Lord Commander. We see the rejection of this kind of, he's not holding on to that part of himself. Is that going to allow him to go? Is he going to have to reclaim that honor in order to motivate people to attack Winterfell? Like, what does he need to own?
He needs a new title.
Yes. Which title does he need to motivate people to back him?
Well, I feel like just like Danny walked out of fire, as soon as this, you know, secret is...
he walked out from being dead.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many parallels in their stories and what they're doing to unite the different armies. But I just feel like, you know, he's not going to reclaim Lord Commander because, as we talked about, you lose a piece of yourself when you come back from the dead.
That part's gone.
That part he lost.
But people are still turning to him for leadership. He's a natural-born leader, and he's trying to reject his position as Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. His watch has ended. He died.
Yeah, I was very happy that they finally vocalized that in this, and vocalized that point that technically he could be released from his oath because he has died.
So, and you know that title that you're talking about? Well, he's the prince that was promised.
Oh, the prince that was
from
promised.
From the very depressed Melisandre.
Who is now a very depressed and scared Melisandre, because Brienne of Tarth kind of knows a little bit.
Yeah, so we have Brienne of Tarth talking to Ser Davos and Melisandre in what was not an explicitly threatening conversation, but was not a friendly one. Just talking about how accountable or how connected she knows they are to Stannis' demise. Renly's demise. Renly. So how she killed Stannis, she's totally upfront about that.
Yeah. She's got and sword in hand.
Shadow Baby from Stannis, from this dark blood magic, killed Renly when she was part of his Kingsguard.
Yeah, she's going to be watching him pretty close. She's going to be around.
But she, wielder of, like, Oath Keeper, she said it is in the past, but she will not forget.
Which I think is great, because you know Melisandre has said she's going to follow Jon and do whatever he wants. I think we know Davos is going to go too, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think Brienne's going to be there too, and it'll be great because Brienne will keep Melisandre in line, I think, anyway.
But does Jon know Melisandre is going wherever
he's going?
You mean,
is she invited?
He kind of owes her a little bit.
Well, and plus, like, he needs her to bring him back. Like, I don't think there's going to be, like...
You think Jon Snow's going to die again?
I think before we have the conclusion of Game of Thrones, I think he will die again. I don't think it's going to happen as many times as Beric Dondarrion, like, six times. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that he's going to need her at least one more time.
Kristen's prediction of the day. More dying for Jon Snow, because the fans haven't been through enough. But
it's expected now.
One more just... point at that table. How about the chemistry? Come on, let's ship Tormund, Giantsbane, and Brianna Tarth. What do you guys think?
I said this from the very beginning, even before the time of the table, when she rode on the horse, I was like, oh my gosh, giant warrior babies from Tormund and Brianna. They would just rule the world,
wouldn't they?
With honor and ferocity. But there was looks at that table. I think they're building this relationship. And we already saw chemistry kind of happened with Brienne and Jaime, or at least if you were a fan of that, mm-hmm. I was, a couple in the past seasons. So now, Tormund and this alliance, could this expand? Because Brienne is kind of flying solo. We have Tormund, who is the figurehead of our wildlings. Mm-hmm. We're going to need these men soon. We have Ser Davos. We have Melisandre. Who are they leading at this point? There's not a ton of people.
They got nothing.
And they now
Do they have anything left of Stannis' army?
All dispersed.
All dispersed. Because they were sellswords, pretty much.
They were, right? Remember, they were running back to the forest. Everyone was just fleeing as the killing was happening.
So they're.
I am seeing some ship names.
Some ship names.
Yes, this is what I needed.
Alan Zepeda says Brimond or Torini?
Torini.
Torini.
Peter D says Tormund.
No.
I like Torini. Torian.
Oh, Torian. We will work on this. We will work on this ship name, but I think it's my favorite love story that could happen right now.
Like
completely. Mm-hmm. Out of any of the characters, this would be my favorite one.
I'm Italian, so I'm going with Torini.
Perfect. And we will need this love affair as they might be going into battle soon with Ramsay. So, Ramsay today, did anyone think that Osha was going to succeed in killing him?
No. Like, even when we were watching it all together, I was like, yeah, she's going to get the knife, but he's going to kill her first.
You're like, oh.
And then finish eating his apple in such
with the same knife.
Cold way.
Of course.
There was a brief moment where I thought he might bite it and it would shift some crazy direction. Because Game of Thrones has done that before. But it was only a fleeting moment.
I like that, though. I like what you were going with, Zach.
I thought he was going to start flaying her just like he did Theon for more information, but. Didn't need to.
I was having Pirates of the Caribbean flashbacks. Like, I'm going to have a whole bushel of apples.
Oh, I just realized, is that why he eats? Like, he was eating such thin pieces of the outside of the apple. Was he flaying the apple?
He was.
I think he was.
This is how you eat everything. You just fillet them.
You fillet the fillet.
But what we had, so from information from Sansa, we have that supposedly Ramsay has about 5,000 people. We don't know if this includes the Umbers.
And the Karstarks.
And the Karstarks.
I don't think it does.
That came after. So all the information that Jon Snow has is that he thinks it's about 5,000. He says he has about 2,000 coming from the Wildlings. There is the unexpected force probably coming from the Vale.
Yes.
Where it's going to get to. But is this even going to be nearly enough if it is 5,000? And if that doesn't include other families.
Well, this is what I think. We've got Melisandre's magic. We have giants.
We have giant.
Giant.
Is it just one?
But Tormund's pretty giant. Brienne's pretty. I mean, they count
Hodor.
For at least five people.
Then we have the sub giants in the north.
So we've they've got a pretty formidable force, and we will get to the Vale. But I think that is the War of the North right now. The Boltons, Karstarks, and Umbers. Who I'm still not entirely, I mean, I guess after Osha died, I mean, at first I was thinking maybe the Umbers were kind of playing Ramsay with bringing Rickon on, but after Osha just got slaughtered, I don't think that's the case.
I'm going to throw this out here before we move on to Robin and Peter, that I don't know if I feel justified by Osha's death yet. Because it was a tactic she already used before, I thought that the actual stab was nice and they did a nice blood.
That was a great
death. But it was a very, quick scene. We've had her for a long time.
I know.
And she was for one scene today, and then she was gone.
I really felt bad about that. I didn't feel good about her death.
Well, she had nothing. She had really had nothing left to offer. The only thing that she had left was possibly try to manipulate Ramsay and kill him. Using sex.
And she was such a fighter, we would have needed her to try and get Rickon to escape over and over
I would
again.
Have rather have seen just a little bit more from her, a bit more of a fight, and a bit more of, me believing that she could actually pull this off before we just kill her. Because I felt like she deserved more. Like you said, we've had her for seasons,
and she's
a fighter.
Used this tactic, so it's a little predictable. But let's get in it to our Robin and Peter.
Littlefinger. He's like my favorite and he's back. I've been waiting for Peter Baelish to come back. You can't say Baelish without Bay.
Alright.
He's the best. No, he's the best. He's always two steps ahead of the game. That's what I love about him. He's like a master He's a chess master in this Game of Thrones.
Yes. So he brought in a present, which I'm sure has more symbolism or meaning.
Right, for sure.
Like, I don't know if it was like he's always been the mockingbird and this is more than a mockingbird. Like, is it rising up? I don't know what the meaning is here, but what it does is very quickly it shows that Peter has power over Robin's decision making. Like, Robin has been in the protection of Royce for quite a while now. Obviously, it's not working. You get that by the shooting arrows. It's just like, there's not a lot of growth here. There's just disappointment. It is just falling flat, not doing well. But Peter comes in, and then the instant he puts someone's life on the line who doesn't deserve to lose it. Royce had to literally... could not defend himself. All he could say was how faithful he was. He had done, that we know of, nothing wrong.
He was, he's trying to protect Robin, to turn him into a lord, you know, the leader that he, it's his responsibility to raise this man, you know, or this boy into a man. But that's not what Robin wants. Robin wants to throw people through the moon door and play with his falcon. And Peter knows that. And so now Peter is Uncle Peter. And he's playing him.
Sorry, guys, like, but I really wanted to see the moon door. Like, I feel like if we're revisiting Robin, it's not Robin unless we see the moon door. So, like, maybe they should have attacked somebody else before Lord Royce and threw them down the moon door, but it just, like, it wasn't...
You wanted to see the moon door.
But they've
again.
Been taken away from pretty much the moon door. I just think they've just completely destroyed House Aaron, pretty much, because from the get-go, season one, House Aaron was supposed to be... ruled by this man that we had heard so many great things about, who raised Ned to be, like, brave, honorable, but everything we've ever seen of our House Aaron is just on a whim, killing people, repeatedly trying to, or putting the lives of people who don't deserve to be killed at risk. And they still have a lot of power, but it's not
Royce, I think the key point of this scene, what was trying to be said here, is that Lord Royce, he's the commander of the armies. Mm-hmm. He holds the army's confidence. And now he has ultimate loyalty to Peter Baelish. So,
He has to.
And so now we have an army that it's in Peter Baelish's best interest to go and get Sansa. So now that's almost a guaranteed force coming back to the North.
It's also one of those ones where I'm not rooting for this force, but we need them for numbers
right now.
It's
just somebody we need.
So we have to.
And I feel like Robin has always sort of tread the mentally ill line. just sort of like sick
throw him through the moon
from his mother.
Like,
there's like a sickness there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited to see what happens when he, like, is he going to be leaving the Vale? Is he going to stay there and just Lord Royce and his army will go? Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see.
He's going to stay and play with his falcon while Peter Baelish
is going
to be calling all the shots.
We will see who we will root for in this. Also, I have yet to pick my side for this next battle that might ensue that's happening in King's Landing.
Yes. Oh,
so a lot of forces... coming together, making amends, seeing where loyalties lie. But your players are pretty much the line of the seven. You have the High Sparrow. You have Septa Anella, you know, who's just brutal while she's there. You have their whole regime. Then you have the Small Council. Then you have, like, the wannabe Small Council.
The smaller council.
The wannabe. And then you have your King, Tommen, and then... in these cells, we have Margaery and Loras, who... Margaery's attempting to get a little bit of power back, it seems.
She doesn't have a good plan, though. And you know what? I'm so sick of the High Sparrow. And, like, his stories are terrible. Like, anytime he comes on the screen, I'm just, like, browsing on something on my phone that was also Game of Thrones. But I have no... like, I don't care about him. I can't wait for his death.
I mean, his speech in this was directly tied to the episode. It was about Book of the Stranger. I believe it was verse, like, 20. 25 mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. And it was how he kind of changed the actual wording from the book. And it's more about how he went to this feast and how he did all these exuberant things that were sinful and he had to basically want nothing. And he related that. And then there was some sort of segue and all of a sudden Marjorie wanting her family equals Marjorie wanting sin. Because you can do no right in this world, but even though she wants sin, he's still going to eventually, let her see her brother, which was a sin.
I really, as far as the High Sparrow goes, I enjoyed the writing in the scene. It was the story kind of irrelevant, but I think you kind of think he's trying to manipulate Marjorie into what he believes, but what I saw right through it, and what I saw was here's a man who gave a lot of his time to try to feel like he was living a life with purpose, but it wasn't the gold, it wasn't the wine, it wasn't the women, what he realized he wanted. I still think he wants power, and I think he's finding that power through this path. Mm-hmm. I mean, he says it's truth,
but yeah.
I think he wants to overthrow an empire, and I think he wants to rule the world. The High Sparrow, I mean, he has plans.
Maybe it's a good thing that we can be divided on whether or not he's actually a true believer for a good way or a bad way. Like, I think that they haven't really, because we never really see from his point of view the scenes, so we don't know exactly what he wants mm-hmm. or the overall aim for this. It just seems that he always is kind of accusatory in what anyone else wants. There seems to be no answer that would actually satisfy him.
Why? What's with all the atonement of queens and people in high power? Why isn't Jim Bob on the corner store doing atonement? You know,
he's
taking down peg by peg. And what I'd like to call this war that's about to happen. When we'll get to King's Landing and the mm-hmm. and the Lannisters and,
well, we can,
and the Tyrells.
Because Cersei
the two pillars, right? Yeah. Pillars of faith and pillars of the crown.
Can we just throw the High Sparrow through the moon door?
Yes!
But would he fly?
I mean, we have a line
to
the moon
door. He would die, and then we'd be done with him.
And that's the thing. If we removed him at this point, nothing would really have changed in King's Landing. If he just completely disappears tomorrow... What happens?
I don't know.
Like, then this you have to have everyone in King's Landing. It goes back to, okay, Marjorie is the queen. Like, how do they feel about all... I guess they have to realign themselves with everyone in the North who they still think mm-hmm. they have connections with Littlefinger, but that hasn't been talked about in a long time. You still had Cersei, who was on a headhunt for Sansa, but that hasn't been talked about in a long time. And the only thing you get from Cersei is that... which I think was to make a point, is that the High Sparrow wants to have a land of beggars. Like, that's what he wants. He wants mm-hmm. everyone to basically have nothing, which is a boring show.
Well, I love the line that actually unites the Queen of Thorns and Cersei, is Cersei putting that thought in her mind mm-hmm. that Marjorie would have to do this walk of atonement. And at that point, they become an alliance because they have a common interest. But Cersei's obviously just doing that, you know, for the time being. She is going to be their alliance till she gets what she wants, which is the High Sparrow to, you know, mm-hmm. die and dissolve. And so it's just like she's going to use them for now, but then they're going to be enemies as soon as the High Sparrow's gone.
A lot of compromises in this episode. A lot of people, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess, for now. So we have the Tyrells that are going to bring in their army because we got Kevin Lannister sitting on, you know, it's a hand of the king. He's like, well, I can't be a part of it unless the king calls me in. And if he does, then I have to stop you guys. But they're not going to let that happen. So you have Lannisters and Tyrells forming one pillar of the war versus the Faith Militant. And I can't wait to see it go down.
Well, but the thing is, nothing ever goes to plan. The plan right now is that Marjorie will never have to walk. The plan right now is that really it's going to be the Tyrell people. But they did make a point to mention that Lancel Lannister mm-hmm. could be a game piece in this. Mm-hmm. Because Cersei tried to make it seem like he still has weight for his father. Mm-hmm. Who knows what his father would do for them? So it's not a perfect plan.
Yeah, it wasn't Lancel Lannister doing what he did. It's what the High Sparrow, what he did to your son, Now all of a sudden, Lancel's a victim, and she's leveraging that to get what she wants.
So we will see. Yep. Also, before we go on, we got a little bit of Pike this week. That was just, I felt like, supposed to remind you that Theon no longer has certain parts, but he apologizes to Yara in a very crumpled display of being a just ruined person that has been torn apart. And she seems to already, I know she was trying to be like Stonewall and like, you're a horrible person, but I could already see some cracks in that, and she was feeling the sisterly love.
Yeah. Definitely. And it helps when he's like, you know, I don't want to be king. I want you to rule. The people admire you. They will follow you. And we kind of knew this. Sarah, you said this a couple weeks ago, that this was what's going to happen. I really wanted him to go and kill Ramsay. I hope that still happens. But you were right. And I can't wait to see what the King's Moon ceremony is.
So this sounds like the big
So that's still happening, even though Theon would be the direct heir, right? Or is it Euron? And where is this guy right now?
So we haven't really... This is why we need Kyle. And we will hound him about this next week.
Kyle.
Is because we haven't really heard a ton, at least on the show, about how Pike determines their leaders.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We know that from earlier this season that supposedly a woman has never ruled.
Mm-hmm.
We know that... We have this claiming to be drowned god.
The brother
Uncle
of
Man.
Euron.
I think that's
Greyjoy.
What we're naming him, but we have to look in the credits. Mm-hmm. He's coming back saying he's going to have a footing in this race. And now, just coincidentally, just by dumb luck, Theon Greyjoy has arrived before this ceremony. Who knows if being the heir or being who he was, if he had come after, if that could have changed anything. We don't know the rules that are governing Pike. We don't know how they pick their king enough. But that's what's exciting, is that probably we're going to find out. I'm hoping that they are the masters of the sea. Maybe we'll get to spend some time with not quite our normal duel, but maybe something interesting.
That's what I think.
That's what I'm hoping.
Because obviously Yara's going to claim it, and then if Euron really is back, which it seems like he is, he's going to claim it. And
it's between them two.
But maybe Theon will fight for his sister in this duel.
Or something.
I'm excited, like you said, to see what exactly this is, and then how do they fight? Is it a battle at sea? Who knows?
I was thinking, at the end of the day, Theon really has no claim because he can't make any heirs. He has no claim.
He doesn't have that claim, but he has the claim of supposedly being the heir, or at least that's how most of our royal families have worked thus far in Westeros. But who knows? I do not. Kyle, you're going to have to comment, or our chat's going to have to tell us these governing rules for Pike. But for now, I think that pretty much covers most of the episode. In the previews, we did see we're going to get more of Arya. Who knows? Happening over there, training. They look to be on the beach of Pike somewhere. What else did you guys catch in the previews?
Sansa and Peter.
White Walkers.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bran apparently works, and it seems like he gets trapped there. If you guys notice, because they're trying to wake him up, and he won't wake up, so it seems like he's kind of trapped with the White Walker. So I'm excited to see what he learns and what knowledge he's going to be able to take
back. That's what I'm excited
about.
I think that in this war state, this is my prediction for the week, is that I think that they are going to be able to communicate with him. I do not think it's going to be like his other episodes where he's shouted out and, you know, not gotten a ton of response. I think in this one, there is going to be an exchange, a communication. I think that's maybe why he gets a little stuck or doesn't want to leave, because it's not him just being an observer anymore. You guys have anything?
I have a prediction. I guess something that we kind of grazed over with Queen Margaery and her brother, Sir Loras. He's saying, please help me end this. And I think that she's going to kind of play ball. I think that she's going to kill him. I think she's going to help. I think it's going to be an assisted suicide.
You think kill him?
Yes. Why not? It will get the Tyrells to do an uprising. It will kind of help that political
Margaery
movement.
Kill who?
Her brother.
Marjorie.
We do have brother killing a lot, well, but I don't know about
is,
that.
What does he mean by help me?
Help me make it end.
Help me make it end. And
maybe
she just finally says,
okay. Maybe if
she could
admit something, it would end. Maybe
yeah,
if they
I think
admit
if
and
she
atone
admits
for
her
their
sins.
Sins.
So they're going to have this whole lining up of her walking down to atone her sins. That's what I think.
I don't think
she'd ever kill her brother. The way that's what she wanted to see her brother, I don't think so. She even says in her words, you know, you're the future of this house, which of course none of us agree with, I don't think.
Yeah.
But if she says that and she thinks that and I don't think it was just in that moment, then I don't see that happening. I think she's going to do the atonement walk but then be interrupted by the war.
Or maybe she'll get some Daenerys inspiration and find another way to do this.
I want to talk about Arya for a second. I think next week it's not going to be training that we see. I think that we're going to actually get to see her on her first mission. I mean, guys, this is going to be episode 5 next week, which means we're halfway through. So we have to see her become a faceless person and go on her first kill mission.
I'd like to see that.
All right.
Okay.
Ryan, do you have any predictions? Or Zach, do you have any predictions?
I mean, Kristen pretty much had mine where the Marjorie admitting or confessing.
So I was I'm way off base.
As she gets into that. We did have some help from the chat.
Ooh, wonderful.
Tony Coney says that the King's Moot, as the many of the chat members were happy to point out, that's the election process by which
I got King's Moon. I'm so glad we have you guys. It's like I knew my ears are going deaf.
Or the King's Moon Door, I suppose, is the King's other thing they were saying. Moot. Just that it's a fun word. It's the King's Moot. Is an election by the lords of the Iron Islands. They vote for their king.
Ooh,
or
fascinating.
Or queen.
An election. We haven't seen that. What are these rules?
Yeah, wait.
I told you, fascinating. I'm hoping we're going to... I wonder if next week will be slow, because we might be learning a lot. Who knows? But it's midway. We normally have lots of death. So, do we have anything else there that we want to highlight from the chat?
I did appreciate this comment from David Von Kettering. Ramsay is getting near the point of comic book villain.
I like that.
He kind of is at this point. Like, he's so evil.
Mm.
Like, what else? Like, he can't do anything worse at this point. Like, we can't hate him more.
You know, and that letter he sent.
Don't
was,
say that too soon.
Come and see.
It was very,
like, yeah,
it was very poetic.
It was very poetic.
It was
villainous, poetic. You guys, since he kills everyone in this horrible way, what would be a satisfying death for Ramsay for you guys?
Ooh, having his eyes scooped out.
I was kind of feeling along the same lines. Like, kind of Princess Bride scenario, like, let him live, but just cut off certain parts, like his ears and his eyes.
Or maybe
his ears.
No.
Eaten by his own
Sansa
dogs.
Wants to go back and claim Winterfell, so Sansa has to kill Ramsay. That's the only satisfying death for me.
Okay. I want his throat ripped out by a dire wolf.
No.
Ooh, yeah. But he does have the whole hounds thing.
Yeah, I'm saying his own dogs. How, like...
Okay.
How poetic
Sansa,
would that be?
She's got
to
kill.
I want Ghost to rip out his throat.
That would be pretty great.
No. Sansa!
Remind me not to piss you off, Zach.
I'm always thinking.
Well, let everyone know where they can find us. I'm at Sarah_Stretton on Twitter. What about you? You guys give all your stuff away.
I am at Cinematic Escape on Twitter and on Instagram. If you like pictures of dogs, none of them are mine. They're not dire wolves, but there are a lot of dogs on my Instagram. It's Cinematic_Escape.
Oh, puppy love.
Puppy love. That's all I got.
That's Ryan Maladies. It's puppy love.
That's my private account. My public one is at Ryan Malady. You can find me Twitter, Instagram. Hit me up, guys. I love hearing from you. Also, if you like our video, please give us a thumbs up because we love you. We hope you like what you see. Subscribe on YouTube and iTunes so you don't miss another episode because it only gets better from here.
Come and see.
There you go.
All right. Thank you so much.
And Zach?
Oh, you guys can find me on Twitter at @ThatZachWilson.
And we will.
I'm excited for Game of Thrones. The rest of the season's going to be nuts. You guys excited?
See you guys next week.
Hodor, Valar Morghulis.
Come and see.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Come and see.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.